outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Well, it's quite a series of events we had this weekend.
More than a little bit. It has been quite the weekend of very tragic and very head-scratching events that have occurred this weekend.
Yeah, very sobering for those of you out of the country. I can't imagine anybody's not heard yet that the presidential candidate and former president, Donald Trump, was attempted to be assassinated by a 20-year-old with a gun on a roof. They missed his head, got his ear. Even saying probably the twitch of his head at just the right moment, that could have been fatal. So it's a very sobering time here in this country with where we've been headed for the last 20 years, with an angry rhetoric that stirs the passions of some people beyond anything reasonable. Mm. Just thinking back to the old abortion days when it was, I think, maybe mid to late 90s, where the rhetoric was so hot about protecting the unborn that people started doing shootings at abortion clinics. And then people want to paint that broad brush, all Christians are doing that kind of thing, when it was really very limited people who were not necessarily mentally stable, who took the rhetoric that other people could understand. We're just talking about protecting the unborn, and we're trying to do it legally, and thought they could take the reins into their own hands with guns. So it's kind of that same thing, right?
Man, it really is. It's this next step of, okay, we're going to try to shift. I don't know. I read your live stream blog about the power of tenderness, and like I literally was writing down quotes from it, and I was thinking through it, and I had a bunch of questions because you talk a lot about, you know, like lions not lambs, and then lambs not lions, and the back and forth, and where are we at with that, and having this like intensity and response. And so I was like writing down all these notes, and then literally the next day I saw my phone start to get blown up by all of these news article alerts, breaking news. Okay, the former President Trump, there's been an attempted assassination. It is a challenging space that we're in. And as I was reading through your blog, I was struggling back and forth about the idea of tenderness and the power of tenderness, and yet like where does the intensity, especially from conservative Christianity, come from, evangelical church come from, in regards to like the quote that you even start the blog off with Aaron, and talking about his feedback on people who are going and getting combat training from private organizations so that they have survival skills and tactical handgun skills and these different things where they're learning to be able to fight back in a very physical way. Often when I think of lion versus lamb, I think back to a lot of the training when I was growing up that basically taught me to be a doormat, that Christianity and following the path of Jesus equated to being an emotional doormat, that you didn't fight for yourself ever, that you always turned the other cheek. And I was in a situation where there was some very intense anger/emotional abuse that was taking place. And so it was like, no, you just need to honor your father. You need to just take it. You need to turn the other cheek. God will be your avenger. God will be your justice. And I'm sitting here in this situation being like, okay, well, I guess to follow Jesus, it means that I am an emotional and physical doormat for anybody who wants to walk over me. And that was the initial perception of what it meant to be a good Christian. That's what I received. That's what I was taught. And some of the discussions that we've had in the past about, man, even these situations where women who are in abusive relationships being told they need to go back to their husband, they need to forgive their husband, they need to stay in it, and that's honoring to them. And this is a tough tension for me, Wayne. Like, I see this as this attempt that occurred over the weekend. I see the shootings that took place over the weekend, and my heart is just breaking and twisted. And this is a tough dialogue for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I realize it can be. And I think what's different about this political thing, this assassination attempt, is it isn't one side against the other. It's one person who seems to be a Republican conservative, who takes a shot at Donald Trump for reasons we don't understand at all.
Yeah.
We have no idea what his motive is, what he was trying to accomplish. Is it just some kid wanting to make a name for himself? Was it some political motive behind this? Because it seemed like if there's a political motive, he ought to be shooting at the other side, not his own side, unless there's some reason he's disaffected from the Trump MAGA thing. I don't know, but it is, I think the rhetoric is now, all the hand-wringing on news channels and all that is, oh, what a bad country we've become. Again, this is one bad actor.
Yeah.
And most of the rhetoric of war about taking America back doesn't come from the left. It mostly comes from the right. And it comes from, you know, gun training to wanting to stand up for guns and talk about the idea that this could be a bloodless revolution if the left cooperates. There's been a lot of language on the right about violence. And then it comes toward the right, on the week of the Republican National Conference or Committee, what do they call that?
The Republican National Convention.
Convention, there's the C word I'm looking for. I couldn't find that C word. Convention, I can just see this is going to take his supporters and amp it up by 150 times of just, here's a martyr for the cause, shed blood and see the deep state, all the stuff that's on the other side of this, that they absolutely fear and abhor. And now Donald Trump is the savior. Now he's a wounded savior. He almost gave his life for the cause. And you could see where this could go, although we don't know yet where it's going to go. The appeal initially is, can we lower the rhetoric? Can we get back to unity? By all indications, former President Trump is also talking about changing his whole speech, making it more about unity and coming together. It's a bandwagon that we've been on for a long time. Yeah. Think back to the language of healing that Bob and Anita and I wrote. This I wrote in 2001 on my blog. I said, I'm appalled by the dishonest, angry rhetoric of this campaign that has further divided our nation at a time when we need to humble ourselves. I'm appalled that both political parties have been corrupted by special interest money that rewards political cronies rather than champions to justice in our society. I'm appalled that both campaigns preferred to spread lies about the other than to inspire the citizenry to a higher common good worthy of the place we hold in the world. I could have written that yesterday.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Nothing has changed. It's only gotten worse. And then from September 1 to 2020, I wrote this. That's the conversation we need to have as a culture, truly listening to each other's concerns, finding the place to make substantive changes for a better society. But most people aren't having that conversation. Not if you listen to the media or to our political parties. They're caught in the throes of a presidential election where both candidates and their supporters are using the current unrest to their political advantage, even if it further divides us with fear and mistrust. Citizens are using violence on both sides, and this has been the Black Lives Matter riots and things, on both sides without regard to the law and order as we tap dance on the precipice of another civil war. Mm. And again, I don't know what to make of one bad actor doing something atrociously horrible. And people have listened to this podcast, you know, I'm not a Donald Trump fan. You know, there's much about his character and the way Christians have built him up to be this moral leader that I completely disagree with. At the same time, man, there's no room for violence in our political dialogue. And there's a lot of rhetoric around violence. There's a lot of, onward Christian soldiers. In the Christian rhetoric, there's a lot about war and military analogies, and we're fighting. And we say principalities and powers, like Paul said, our struggle's not against flesh and blood. It's not against other people. But it seems to always aim that way. Again, I'm not giving a pass to the left here. I think the rhetoric of on the left, the whole idea of democracy is at stake, and if Trump is reelected, that fuels that idea of eliminating the threat. Mm-hmm. And then the Republicans do it in the same way. The MAGA crowd is the deep state and all that's trying to destroy democracy. And this is a new revolution, and we've got to take our country back. And I don't know that what happened Saturday is the fruit of all that. I still know the rhetoric of our country has gone too far. And it's been that way for 20 years. And no one is even trying to stop it a little bit. There'll be some lip service given to it for a week after an event like this. And then they're going to use it like everything else. We're going to use the tragedy to amp up our side's agenda, however we can use it. If it's to blame someone else, if it's to make us look like heroes, it's going to be the same tired manipulation of a narrative to prove that our side is good and the other side is evil. And that's just doesn't bode well for our future.
It doesn't. And it was interesting. I mean, my family is very diverse in their opinions in regards to political affiliation and orientation. And so my Facebook feed is usually a plethora of different responses. But so there was one meme that I saw, and it was like all of these fully armed, like fully armored out angelic warriors that are surrounding Donald Trump. And this, like, basically the quote over it was protecting the divine elect was the quote idea behind
the that divine meme. What?
Divine protection over the divine elect.
Elect. Okay.
Yes. So that Trump is the divine elect. And so there's divine protection that's taking care of him, that kind of mentality idea. And then there was another one that I really appreciated. And it was this, essentially the idea of how have we departed ourselves so far from appreciating the humanity of the people that are around us. So whether it be Joe Biden and him navigating some very serious later stage life complications and challenges, that having had two grandparents pass away from dementia and Alzheimer's, gosh, it is awful. It is an awful degenerative disease that is heartbreaking, and it's, man, just the impact that it has on families and social circles. And then on the flip side of, I don't care who they are. Okay, so Donald Trump, whether you're a supporter or not, does that justify his assassination because of whatever ideology or whatever idea? How have we separated ourselves from honoring the humanity of the people around us and saying, Lord, these are your beloved. How do we care for them? How do we show them your kingdom? How do we come alongside of them and do life with them instead of completely minimizing or villainizing whichever party it is or whatever individual it is?
Have you all diagnosed President Biden with Alzheimer's or dementia? Are you there?
No, just
okay. It sounded like it.
Well, just watching the things that he is displaying, the behaviors that he is displaying, they would allude to me characteristics of somebody who is moving in that direction or who is facing some of those later stage degenerative diseases.
And anybody who's had an aging parent, even something as simple as getting the car keys out of their hand for them not to drive anymore because they're dangerous drivers, is such a huge challenge because nobody likes to give up anything. No one likes to admit, or few do, you know what? I probably shouldn't be driving anymore. I'm just not safe here. Let's sell the car. You can have the keys. That's the biggest challenge in any family with an aging parent is how do you get your parent to realize that they're no longer capable of doing the things they want to do?
Yeah.
And they feel like it's an abridgment of their freedom or their choice.
And yet it even circles back to some of the elements that you were discussing in your blog post about how the characteristics of the kingdom, humility, kindness, tenderness, those things are so incredibly important in those spaces. So, I mean, like my great uncle, they found him doing 75 miles an hour outside of Fort Collins on the wrong direction on the interstate. And because he had gotten out of his Alzheimer's unit and
stole a car or what? How did he get out of the unit and get a car? Is he running 75 miles an hour?
I don't know how he got access to the pickup that he did, bluntly honest. I do not know that. That has been a mystery. As you said, like the humility, the kindness, the tenderness. I mean, he had no idea where he was or what he was doing. He thought he was driving to the ranch to go and take care of the cows. And he was 2.5 hours away from where he was supposed to be.
Oh, my gosh.
So often it's easy to dismiss people and the challenges that they're going through and just the humanity that they are versus saying, Lord, what what does it look like to love and care and be humble here in the space? But you're right. Like to, for an aging adult to give up that autonomy, to have the humility to say, no, I don't have the capacity to do this anymore. That is a really hard thing too.
Especially when everybody around them is questioning that as well. Everybody around is going, except for what's being hidden. And I think one of the real things that will come out in time is how much the advisors around President Biden have hidden the symptoms of whatever is going on with him. And they've had interviews recut to take out any kind of lapses of sanity or whatever he's going through. And it's just sad that we, and I think this speaks to the loving kindness toward whether it's President Trump or President Biden, is the caricature that a political person becomes. And I think they do it to themselves. So I'm not saying society does it to them. They become very one-dimensional. They've got to appeal to people in a certain way if they're going to, because we know what pulls the levers of power. And it's not honesty, authenticity, and kindness. It's not those things. When I was writing the article, one of the quotes I used in the article, if people haven't read it, is from Gregory Boyle, Father Gregory Boyle, who's a Catholic priest who runs Homeboy Industries here in Los Angeles. And I heard this on a podcast, and he said this: we want to be anchored in loving kindness, knowing that kindness is the only non-delusional response to anything. That's a powerful statement, right? Oof. Which is to say, all other responses, rage, anger, self-righteousness, high horsiness, I especially like that one, everything else is delusional, but kindness isn't. Mm. Now, I've taken that quote to heart because I think there's something, loving kindness is a big Old Testament word for God and his care for us. In the midst of other things God gets blamed for in the Old Testament that may not necessarily be his doing, the people who write, David and the prophets and others, talk about this loving kindness of God, which is like love on steroids. I think loving kindness has, for most of my life, been something that's kind of like, there's really loving somebody, and then loving kindness just being nice to someone. According to the Hebrew, people who know this stuff, I'm not a Hebrew guy, but people who know this stuff say loving kindness is a deeper word than love. Loving kindness is a holistic approach to other people in my life. It's a deep, deep affection for them and a desire for their highest good. That's what loving kindness is, not just I love you. And when God offers that to us, that's huge. And to say, so I check myself. There are things I read in the media, things I see on TV that like make me angry, that make me want to stand up and do something other than kindness. And I come back to this quote repeatedly going, okay, every other response is delusional. If that's true, and I think this quote is true, even though it's not in scripture, then I'm going, okay, so what am I deluded about that makes me angry here or makes me feel powerless here? If loving kindness is the only non-delusional response to human pain and human need and human life, there's a guidebook in that one little thought right there to the very next circumstance you're in. It would be, okay, where am I being taken out of loving kindness? And if I am, what am I being deluded about? And it may be that I have to protect myself. It may be whatever. It's not just how I'm deluded about another person. I may be deluded about where power really exists. And so I can ask that question. I can also ask, what does it mean to respond out of loving kindness here? What would loving kindness lead me to do in this situation? And that's immediate temper check from someone who, because I think I partly the Phariseistic nature of Christianity that I grew up in and was good at, anger was a constant companion. I can go from 0 to 60 in the anger department in about half a second in the old days. And I can still get angry today, but it's more restrained and it's more, I'm kind of catch it really fast going, okay, this is a road I don't want to go down because I've been down that road too many times. So getting to this loving kindness is the only non-delusional response. That would change a whole, if everybody bought into that. Okay, so I'm angry here. So I want to lash out. So I want to get even. So I want to, okay, that's delusional. So figure out how that's delusional might be a good thing. And then what would loving kindness lead me to do instead in this situation? And I don't mean the political media, national, you and I have no input to the national discussion of anything. No. So it's more important to the next Trump supporter I meet or Biden supporter or the next situation I'm in that riles me up or gets me worried. If loving kindness is the only non-delusional response, that would check my heart enough to lean into better space than to go with the emotion of the moment.
That is a disruptive heart check to me. I like it. I need to mull over that a little bit more. It is a disruptive heart check to me. The first question that comes to my mind, though, is, Father, how do I exist in a world? If I'm asking that heart question, or if I'm intentionally pressing into that heart check and saying, okay, what does this look like, Lord? How do I live this out? What does love and kindness look like in this situation or in this space? In a world that the vast majority of people aren't asking that question. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's too broad of a brush to paint with.
No, I think it's pretty accurate. I wouldn't dispute you there.
I guess I know there's a way through. I know there's a kingdom way through that. But my stomach tightens up a little bit at the thought of that. Be like, okay, Lord, oof, that is not going to be easy. And I know that you said it wasn't going to be. I know that you said that, but that seems incredibly difficult at times to be able to pause and ask that question, or even have the desire to ask that question at times when, if I'm surrounded in a space or in a conversation or a situation where I'm the only person asking that question, or feel like I'm the only person asking that.
Or maybe actually are.
Or maybe actually I am. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Particularly if there's a fear of that's going to get me abused.
Correct.
And one of the things I said in the article that I think is real important is most of us think love is a very weak thing. Mm. Kindness is a very weak thing. So if I'm going to do loving kindness, I'm a doormat in the world. And I really tried to draw a real distinction and say, no, this is not about being a doormat. This is not about, you can be kind and be firm. You can say, look, you don't get to do that to me, and I'm going to ask you to stop. And if you don't stop, I'm going to remove myself from the equation so that you don't have the right. My being kind to you, me treating you with respect and you giving me disrespect doesn't have to continue to be kind. But the other response is either I remove myself from it or I've got to meet disrespect with disrespect.
Correct. I've got to fight back with the same amount of fire or more, double the fire so that I hopefully put it down forever so that it never comes back up again.
Yeah, I like that scripture about a soft answer turns away wrath, but I haven't noticed that to be effective with people who are quote unquote your enemy. A friend, when he's all riled up about something or she, and you respond in a calm, reasoned way, that will definitely lower the temperature of what's going on.
Yeah.
But if it's an quote unquote enemy, and I'm using air quotes here for those of you who can't see it, when it's an enemy, they're going to take it as a sign of weakness and keep coming at you. They're going to pile on. And I think that immediately tells you what kind of circumstance I'm in. If I've asked you, hey, please, you're being abusive, could you stop? And they won't stop. They keep doubling down because they've got to convince you, and they're battering you, if words and emotions, if not physical bashing, then I do think the only thing is to say, and I've done this. I've done this to people who are very important to me. I've just said, listen, I consider what you're doing abuse. I'm going to ask you to stop. And the response was, oh, so you don't want to ever talk again. No, I'd love to talk to you when some measure of tenderness returns. But if you're going to bash me as someone I deeply love and care about, I'm not going to sit here and take it unless, and here's the big caveat there, unless Jesus asks me to. And Jesus obviously suffered the abuse of the whole world, the lying politics of the Roman Empire and Pilate and Herod and everybody gauging what I need to do here to serve me, even if we have to bash you, the lies of the religious leaders in Jerusalem, all of that, all the abuse is coming at Jesus. He can stop it. He could just walk out of the room. He could call 10,000 angels. He could have blasted people to oblivion. He accepts our hostility against himself as a means to redemption. And there are times when God will say, take the abuse. There are. They're very rare, though. I think people who have been traumatized and have suffered abuse a lot, and their proclivity is, okay, I'm just a doormat. Go ahead and let me have it. You've got to realize, okay, that's not godly. The very thought, I'm a doormat, is telling you, no, no, we're not going down that road. You're not a doormat. I've used to people, I'm not your whipping boy. I'm not.
Yeah.
If you're upset and angry at your life, then be upset and angry at your life. You want to vent to me, vent to me. You want to use me as your whipping boy. You want to accuse me of stuff that isn't true because it makes you feel better. I'm not going to stand for it. I'm just not. I'm going to remove myself from the relationship unless the abuse is part of a redemptive work. And some of the conversations I had with Sarah when we're still apart, and Sarah's not an abusive person, but some of the things she was saying were incredibly hurtful. And I could have gotten mad and walked out. She was operating in her trauma, obviously, and in the lies, this fake world her first therapist created. But I can either stay in that world with her kindly and tenderly, and there's hope of redemption, and there was, and it was all worth it now, which is different than a spouse is abusing their wife or husband. And I've seen this. I've seen people stay in relationships that are absolutely destructive to their souls. Because, and I've seen it both from the wife and the husband, the anger, the control, the if you cross me again, I'll make your life miserable. That stuff, and whether it's to remove yourself temporarily, saying, listen, I'm not going to continue in this destructive relationship with you. So let's go get it fixed. That'd be job one.
Yeah.
It's my spouse. I love them. Let's get it fixed. If we can't get it fixed, then I may have to remove myself because I do not deserve the abuse of other people in the name of loving kindness as an obedience to God. That makes sense?
It does. It honestly brings up a question to me, though, especially as a parent and a parent of young kids. One of our kids is navigating some pretty challenging stuff right now where there's some anger, frustration, some real unkindness that is started to manifest, and both towards Jess and I and towards their community. And
hey, we've got a puppy like that, so I understand. Sure. I got a fresh wound on me today from that puppy. It was an accident, though.
So I've been wrestling with what does I hear that, and I guess I just wrestle with, okay, what does that look like in the context of a parent to a young kid that is really struggling with being unkind and rebellion and anger? What does it look like to model that, to be love and kindness to them, when if it was anybody other than my kid and they were not like the age that they are, I would say, I'm sorry, this relationship is not going to continue in its current state because I will not put up with this type of behavior. Mm-hmm. I will not put up to being treated the way that you are attempting to treat me. That's not an option.
Yep.
And yet as a parent and trying to steward and champion and encourage my kids into knowing and being a conduit for love and kindness in the world, I'm not sure what to do with it.
I don't think we just meet that kind of aggression with kindness and somehow they're going to get it someday. Kindness is better than that. I like what Danny Silk said in the loving our kids on purpose thing, where he says, look, you're angry, you're throwing a tantrum, and you can't do anything about your feelings. I get that you're angry, but in our home, we respect each other and love each other. So if you need to work out this anger, why don't you go up to your room, and when you're done or you want help, come back down with a different attitude, and we'll be here to accept that. And I think that's the same kind of removal. It's not, I'm rejecting you as my child and we'll never have a good relationship again. It's just simply saying that kind of behavior is out of bounds in this home because we don't treat each other that way. You notice dad doesn't treat you that way and mom's not treating you that way. So why don't you go to your room until you work this out? And if you want help, come back and just say, Dad, I'm angry. I don't know what to do. Can you help me? If you want help, I'll help you. But I'm not going to sit here and be the victim of your wrath. And, you know, this is unacceptable at your daycare, wherever you're with your community and you're acting out. These things are unacceptable, and there's got to be consequences so that they can back off of those things. But I like when he says, you know, you can't help that you're angry. Man, sometimes I get angry. But when I get angry, I tend to move away from people so I don't harm them. You're not, you're harming people who love you and care about you. And so you need to take a break from the family until you can sort that out.
I have a little bit of pushback, though. I like a lot of the stuff that Danny Silk talks about in Loving Our Kids on Purpose. The pushback that I have is she's young enough that how is, I guess my challenge is that if I'm sending them to their room and saying, then you can come back or distancing them, I'm not teaching my child how to work with and navigate their emotion. And that's I'm basically sending them and saying, okay, you go and figure out how to manage your emotion by yourself in your room. And then when you're ready to come back out, then we can talk about it or we can ask for help. And yet the challenge is that especially at that age, that's a big ask. It's quite a bit out of the capacity, mental development, maturity, et cetera, at least of the kids' ages that Jess and I are trying to parent at 2 and 4. And so that's where, man, I am caught between a rock and in a tense place here, because it's like, Lord, I want to bring love and kindness into this space. I want to teach my daughters how to foster and manage free will well. But I also want to, I don't know what it looks like to coach them and encourage them and teach them how to manage their emotion, especially when they're explosive, angry, tantrums, et cetera, without just saying, you go to your room, you figure it out by yourself, and then when you're ready to come back, like, or if you want to ask help, but you need to be in a different emotional space, you know, that type of thing. That's a tough tension for me.
It is tough. It is what we're taught. Even our dog trainer told us about Mandy. When she's in this red state, they use red, yellow, green, and we can see it in Mandy. We know she's in a red state. You can teach her nothing in a red state.
Correct.
The first thing, you want to get her back to something. And for her, it's not making eye contact and not trying to boss her around, just moving away from her till she calms. And then when she calms, then we can have the exploration of what happened and how we're going to deal with it in the future. And I think you can be wonderfully, tenderly firm with your child, which isn't go to your room until you straighten up. That's not that. It's just simply, hey, listen, this is not acceptable. We can't have this way here. So you're not going out and figure out your anger. You're just going out and figuring out, why am I responding this way? And when they calm down, because usually it's reactive, right? They don't have a whole lot of, I figured this out and this is my latest tactic to win over my mom and dad. It's just, they're just reacting. And so when they can go up to the room, have some quiet space, being firm is not unloving or unkind.
I completely agree.
And then when they're more open, I think you're going to have the chance to say, look, Dad gets angry too, and this is how I deal with my anger. And I definitely think a one-year-old throwing a tantrum, you're not going to have that conversation with. You're just not.
Right.
But as they get older, then I think 4 is old enough to have that conversation. Why do you feel like you have to react that way when you're unhappy about something? I'm willing to listen.
Yeah.
But we're going to listen in a certain mode. And yelling and screaming and throwing things is not that mode.
No, I agree. I think one of the things that I am, if they go in and they destroy their room or they tear apart their bed or they draw on the walls or they cut their own hair, you know, things like this, it's like, okay, I left them to their own, like to decompress, to reduce their emotions, to de-escalate. And in the midst of their de-escalation process, there was destruction that took place behind closed doors. So it's
That's where sitting in the corner becomes a better option, right?
Right.
Yeah. So then if that's an issue, I know I used to love to ignore the scripture that the meek inherit the earth. Because I don't think that's true in any observable sense about any situation you're in. You got a boss at work that's ugly. You've got a relative that lies about you and gossips to destroy your relationships in a family. I don't find in those sense that the meek inherit the earth. It's
yeah.
And I grew up one-upping. You're going to come at me? I'm going to come at you. One amp over it. You're going to jump that. I'm going to jump you. And I didn't find too many situations that I couldn't overwhelm at some point, whatever was coming at me.
Yep.
So it was a scripture I loved to ignore, but I don't anymore. I do think it's the meek. And I don't see meek as weak. I know a lot of people do. Yep. And I did back then. I saw meek as very weak. Oh, you're just going to be a little mamby-pamby, kumbaya, everybody loves each other. And I'm going to keep doing that when you just beat me over the head with a stick. And, you know, that's not it. Jesus didn't live. I think I said in the article, no one accused Jesus of being a pushover. Not with the Pharisees,
that's very true.
Not with other people. At one point at his trial, he took on the, I'm not going to defend myself and I'm going to let this happen for a larger redemptive purpose. Yeah. But through the whole of his life, he's not a pushover. And I don't think he's mean either. I think he can clear the temple without being, you know, this enraged idiot that we often hear people say, oh, God gets that way. Can he? I think you can clear the temple. I think you can look to Pharisees and say, your scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites. I've said very difficult things to people nicely. And so to me, the meek inheriting the earth is when I'm not trying to win over you by power, I give you the opportunity to become a better human and to enter into a relationship. Now you can refuse that, and then I want you in jail. Okay. If you're going to take guns on the street and shoot people, I tenderness is not going to fix you. Jail cell is, and maybe you'll find tenderness in there, or you'll find a way to care about people around you. But I do think, in the coming days, if this really, even the assassination attempt this weekend, even the political nightmare that our country is in right now from both sides, there is no good options in this election, and there's no way that this is probably going to turn out well for the world. And so are we pushing up against something that may look like the end of the age? Are we getting close to that? And I think we are. And then the real test is, do you really believe when God says, listen, be meek, which is, as my Greek professor defined meekness, it's a war horse at rest. Now, I never got that when I was there. I remember the definition. It means you have the power to do and you don't do until God asks you to do. And you don't assume he asks you to do it just because you're uncomfortable. But that meekness, that kind tenderness in the face of a very dark world, I think will make God's glory known in the situations that we're in. And when we fight power for power, rank for rank, nasty words for nasty words, then no light shines in the world. It's just increasing sense of darkness. So I'll be interesting to see in the next few years how the meek really do inherit the earth, but I do think at the end of the day they will. As crazy as that sounds. It still sounds crazy saying it, but that is what Jesus said.
Yeah.
He demonstrated it. And I don't think we see it enough because we don't wait long enough for meekness to win. We give meekness about a day and a half.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, okay, that's not working. I need to protect myself.
Yeah.
But a lifestyle of being at rest in who God is, firm about what's true and not true, willing to take space from people who are destructive and harmful. I think all that makes for a better package than I'm going to ramp up anger for anger and fight for fight.
Yeah.
Whether political parties can do it, I don't think so. I think very quickly all this is going to get restructured because so much is at stake, and I don't mean just the future of our country. I mean so much money is at stake by various corporations, by who wins the White House, that the bottom line approach in American politics, when the Supreme Court allowed all that money to influence politics, but it's a bottom line business completely. And so whatever sensitivity we have to the difficulties of the country, and maybe our rhetoric's too hot, maybe we ought to calm things down. I expect it to last about a week and a half or two, and then it will go by the boards again, because there's so much at stake for people who want to win the next election just to line their pockets. Not even the people who have a political point of view. It's that set of policies makes my business better than that set of policies. And that's all they're engaged in, is their bottom line. But I tell you, that the whole article about tenderness and learning to be at rest in what God does, and yes, that costs me relationships. It has cost me relationships. I could have stayed in them, honestly, if I'd have fought tit for tat. Yeah. I could have stayed in them. I could let them know how disgruntled I was, and you're going to treat me this way. And I could stay in those relationships to increasing harm. And I stepped out. That gives hope of some change. But if it doesn't come, man, the meek really do inherit the earth, because I don't live. I mean, I had one person I've been angry for 2 years. Well, I haven't been angry for 2 minutes, not in the last 2 years. I have not. So I think that's part of where the meek inherit the earth is, if I'm not going to be in relationships that are hurtful, and I'm going to find relationships that are close to me with firmness and compassion, we're going to find an avenue to navigate that will be healthy for both of us and not just me or you. I think that really does mean that we already inherit the earth just by the different space we live in every day. I don't have the agitation and the anger, even about the election. So many people, you just talk about the election, how much anger, just right. I'm just agitated by who wins or no wins. I'm not agitated either way. Either way, God wins. Either way, if this pushes us to more chaos in this country, then that moves us closer to something God wants. And maybe what God wants is for America. I mean, when I read Revelation about the Babylon city that falls in a day, and I go, man, if that doesn't describe the United States, then I don't know if that's what it intends to describe.
Yeah.
But exported our harlotries over to all the world. People make money off of the United States. I mean, all the merchants of the world are destroyed when Babylon falls. It falls in a day. I go, maybe that's time. And I know it makes people nervous, but I'll just go, God, bring it on, because what's next? It's the redemption of the world. It's all that we've wanted our whole lives, for God to redeem this world to himself. And if that comes through difficult times, so be it. But I know I'm older, man. I don't have young kids growing up in a world that could go sideways so easily.
And I think even just when I think about the meek inheriting the world, as you were just talking, one of the thoughts that came to my mind is, what is the inheritance that we are ascribing to that verse? Because if we're ascribing wholehearted life and healing and captives that have been set free and hearts that broken hearts that have been bound back up and relationships that have been redeemed, okay, yeah, I could see that. But often when they say the meek inherit the earth, it immediately shifts to power, money, control, leadership, right? Like that's where often that idea go, well, of course that's the inheritance, instead of, no, I'm inheriting a better space in life, and I'm inheriting rest, love, and play. I'm inheriting a eternally bound relationship that with the creator of the universe that can supply, and is one of the elements, relational elements, is peace that surpasses all understanding. Huh, that's a different inheritance, but that sounds like a pretty good inheritance. I mean, especially in the fleeting things of this world and how quickly they can turn on a dime, the Babylon can fall in a day. I would much rather have my inheritance be of substance that cannot be stolen, an inheritance that's protected for me by somebody that won't allow it to be corrupted.
As Hebrews says, the kingdom that cannot be shaken. That's where you want your inheritance to be. If it can be shaken, it's not good enough. But I do wonder if at the end of the day, the meek inheriting it really is, you know, like the parent coming into the room and the kids are fighting over something, and one is fighting more than the other, and the other one's getting taken advantage of. And the parent just comes in and says, okay, stop. Why don't you take all your marbles and give it to, and take the marbles and give it to the other, the meek one. I don't know if there won't be an eternal reality to the meek really inheriting the earth. In the short term, I think it's more what you said. If you're comparing power for power, it's better for me to be an obnoxious idiot and get my way than to be a tender-hearted person that gets taken advantage of. I get that.
Yeah.
But in the long run, particularly if God is watching your back, so you don't have to, then you can live wholeheartedly in a fractured world and then maybe inherit it, what it really means, the world of redemption, in a way that people who didn't learn to live there may miss out on. I don't know. We'll see.
That we will.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.